Welcome to In the Hive, I'm Roger McDonough. You've probably, at some point in the past few months, heard about a new model for helping the Salt Lake Valley's homeless population. A deal between state leaders and the city and county came together a couple of years ago. It meant the closure of the downtown shelter and the launch of new homeless resource centers. After some back and forth over where the new facilities would go and how many there would actually be, construction began in 2018 on three new centers. One specifically for men, one for women, and one that will have men and women combined. Under the terms of the deal, the existing Road Home emergency shelter in downtown Salt Lake City would be closed and torn down, though that closure has seen some delays and has been pushed back to October. Meanwhile, the other existing shelter, a family shelter in Midvale, would stay open and be expanded. State and local leaders have been emphasizing the idea that the three new facilities are resource centers. They aren't just shelter from the elements or a collection of beds. It's a different way of tackling the problem. So what does that really mean? In June, there was a ribbon-cutting ceremony for the first of the new facilities, the Geraldine E. King Women's Resource Center, which officially opens at the end of July. I took a tour of the new facility to find out why a resource center is different from a shelter. My tour guide?
I'm Suati Valu. I'm the Division Director for Adult Homeless Services for Volunteers of America.
Volunteers of America, Utah will operate the Geraldine E. King Women's Resource Center on 7th South between State Street and 2nd East, where a Deseret Industries building used to be. The other two centers will be run by the Road Home and Catholic Community Services, respectively. At the Women's Center opening, before we began our tour, Suati Valu told me about some of the challenges in helping people experiencing homelessness and how some of the siloing of different populations that is planned could help.
We have this spectrum of need as clients are experiencing homelessness. We see many that may need a little bit of assistance in shelter and then are able to get their jobs back or whatever and move on, and that's the last time we see them. And then you see others that have other barriers and all of that. So I think this new model, or I guess a new model, it's kind of a weird thing to say, but...
I know, the question is it a new model? I understand what you mean. It's definitely new funding, new buildings, and a new opportunity to help people.
Yeah, it's a new way to do it. I mean, we've been doing it kind of the large shelter and that sort of thing. And so I think really being able to separate the populations and be specific on the services that we have are extremely important for folks, especially as we think about vulnerability. And when I say vulnerability, I want to be really careful not to mean in a weak way, but we know that women, youth, trans women of color are pretty much the most targeted as far as high risk of assault or anything like that. So really being mindful of like when we're seeing those populations, how do we address their needs and all of that. And so in these kind of separate facilities, we're able to do that a little bit better.
That sentiment was also echoed by Salt Lake County Mayor Jenny Wilson, who was in attendance the day of the ribbon cutting.
I think this is a new phase in homelessness care. We've had far too many people trying to get a bed in the heart of downtown, and I think this new model gives people an opportunity to find the success they're looking for. Critical to the strategy is connecting people to services. And I'm thrilled that this beautiful facility, I'm stunned. I walked through some time ago, did a hard hat tour, but now to see the beauty of this center, it's going to allow some sorting out for people to share their needs and for us to connect those women, in this case, to services.
So how does that sorting happen? Suati Valu from Volunteers of America, Utah, says it's about partnerships with service providers. Service providers who will be on-site and in-house at the new Women's Center. For example,
we are really grateful to be able to partner with 4th Street Clinic. So this is the medical clinic. They'll be here full-time. A nurse practitioner will work with clients to get them connected into medical services. And then once a week, their large mobile RV will come through. Wait, are you with 4th Street Clinic? Could you tell? I mean, I I don't think I do it justice. If you could tell a little bit about the services you'll provide in shelter.
Would you mind telling me your name as well? I'm Roger with KCPW Public Radio.
Hi, I'm Lindsay. I'm at 4th Street Clinic. I'm the client care manager. So here we'll have a nurse care manager that will be on site daily, just providing things under her licensure. And then every week we'll have our mobile clinic that will come and park outside, and we'll have a provider on site. We have 3 exam rooms, so she'll be able to see patients just like she would if they were to come into the clinic.
There are also, of course, case managers, people who work as advocates in a variety of ways for people experiencing homelessness.
So our case management team will work on just a variety of wraparound services. Our focus always will be safe housing, like how can we get you to a safe environment? And first we'll look at all these different options. Is it an option for you to go back home or to go with a family member or anything like that? We'll explore all of those things. Utah Community Action will be doing the assessment and diversion with clients initially to kind of see, is there another place that, you know, that you can connect back to and all of that? And if not, obviously coming into shelter and then seeing what their needs are depending, with the focus on safe housing. But if there are a lot of folks have other challenges that we have to address first, so we'll have to do that simultaneously, right? We're going to help you do all your housing applications while you're working on whatever it is. We really want it to be client-centered as far as the client's going to determine what their goals are, right? Yeah. But also, you know, just as a as an agency, as a shelter, we want to make sure that we keep an eye on appropriate housing for them, because, I mean, there's different levels, right? Some with more support, more case management, and others with little and all of that. So,
is there any kind of cap, limit, time frame? You know, somebody comes to shelter, they're here for a week, they're here for longer. I mean, who knows how long? Is there any sort of rules on that?
No, I mean, people can be in shelter for a very long time. Our hope is that we're engaging with them so that we can see the need, build a rapport, because a lot of times it's that, you know, they've been through many service providers and just won't share information, and that takes a little while to build. What, at least in talking with the road home, the data shows that majority of folks resolve their homelessness within 60 days-ish, and then you see these folks with other barriers that they need support and help with. So I think it all depends. It's individual. And then also, sorry, on top of that, it's whether housing's available. Because we can do all of this and cycle around, and the gap will maybe affordable housing. And I know that the city and the state are doing a lot towards growing affordable housing and like really affordable housing.
Right, because right, there's barriers to employment, there's barriers to making any money to pay for that.
Absolutely.
Okay, so these are all sort of different bays, different areas where case management can happen.
And we'll also have our homeless outreach team. So currently they're kind of next to our admin office, but we'll have our homeless outreach team also stationed here. I mean, well, their home will be here, but they'll be in the community working with unsheltered folks to see what are the barriers on you coming into shelter, especially now with this new model. Because a lot of times for folks, it would be, I don't want to go back down there. That's where I used to use, or it feels unsafe, or whatever the case may be, why people weren't coming to shelter, to be able to say, well, this is a new model. We want you to see it. So for us, especially for the women, since it's our women's shelter, we have our staff currently working with the road home, working with clients so that they get used to them, try and build rapport with them before they move over. This is all about how we transition in the best way possible. And so they're down there daily with them and just trying to build that rapport so that when we say, okay, this area is closed and we can move to the other shelter, that they feel like, okay, no, I know you. I feel, you know, maybe I'll be able to do that. And then we're also offering some tours for clients prior to opening. So like we'll have a little lunch and then have them walk through the building with staff just so that they can see this is kind of where you'll be staying now. So hopefully alleviate any kind of anxiety that they may have.
Another aspect of helping the women who will be staying at the Geraldine E. King Women's Resource Center has to do with peer support.
I'm not sure if you're familiar with peer support.
No.
So we'll have one certified peer support specialist, and the great thing about peer supports is they is they have lived experience, and then they go through a training, a certification, so that they can work with people that are experiencing like homelessness, mental health issues, substance use issues, to kind of say like, it's possible. Like, you know, I've gone through that and all of that. And it's an evidence-based practice and something that we value. And I think peers are a great...
You can go. Yeah, of course.
As we talked about the importance of establishing those peer connections between the homeless and those who have overcome it, Ativalu spotted somebody very much involved in that effort.
I was telling him a little bit about the recovery community and what that means.
It's
and
Mary Jo.
Yeah, Mary Jo McMillan with USARA.
Yeah, tell me about the program.
Well, we call it USARA. I call it USARA. USARA is a recovery community organization, and we run a recovery community center in Salt Lake County. We're opening one in Weber County, and we have one in St. George. And what we do is we run recovery support services that are all peer driven. So it's individuals with lived experience from their own recovery from substance use and co-occurring mental health disorders. We actually serve the VOA. Mm-hmm. Twice a week, our peer coaches, we call them recovery coaches, go into Volunteers of America detox program to help people with withdrawal management support so that when they leave the program or the center and try to access services or waiting to get further services, we'll connect with them as peer support for whatever they need. Our role is really to help them continue to stay motivated to get the support that they need to get better.
And to build that community outside of services, right?
Exactly, because there's a lot of gaps in services. Right. So if you have a person that can help you navigate the next step to the service you need, that's really what the recovery coaches are doing, is to bridge that gap, because most of those people, they know exactly, you know, what those gaps were like, how difficult they were, what barriers they experienced, and now what we're looking at is they now have a person who can help them as they deal with moving through the barriers. You know, and the fortunate thing is that we have these wonderful partners within the system of care, both healthcare, substance use treatment, withdrawal management, and homeless services, that we really now are building a much more robust system that people can have access to care and support wherever they enter the system.
How big is that peer network? I mean, how many people do you have as peer? I mean, obviously, it keeps growing. The more success stories there are.
Well, I would say we have employees, and so USARA itself, but it's throughout because it's a statewide organization. We have 28 employees, but the volunteer effort and the community effort. So I would say some of our volunteers are employed at Volunteers of America, mm-hmm. and vice versa. And so we all really interact. So the number of peers, the peer network, is so large I can't keep track of it anymore, which is really fundamentally important for this system, because we need that additional support. It can't just be paid people who are rallying around to get people help. It's definitely a lot of, I think, initiative and sustainability that is really being driven by people in recovery themselves. That would be my message. And they're employable now. They're people we should be using in our system of care to help us help people get their needs met to get better.
Mary Jo McMillan, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you very much. And Sue, thank you. This place
Love
is
you.
Beautiful. Please, oh, my God. Yeah, no.
There's a lot more to the physical tour of the building that Ativalu from Volunteers of America, Utah, gave me. Things like a storage area.
A huge concern for our folks experiencing homelessness is, what about their stuff? Because many times when they're going into the programs, they can't take all of their stuff, so they're stashing stuff, losing stuff, stuff's getting stolen. And so the opportunity to...
The dorms where the women will sleep.
One? Mm-hmm. This will have 16 beds in it,
okay.
And then the other dorms will have between 41 and 48.
This is pretty big.
Yeah. So we'll have 16, and this is actually a support room. There'll be blinds there, so if we have someone that may be struggling and it may be difficult for them to be in the main milieu, we can have them.
A space for barber services.
So there's a barber shop room in the three shelters, and really it's just to help. I mean, if you've ever been to a barber or a salon, you feel a little bit better after. And then especially if clients are wanting to go on interviews and that sort of thing, we want to be able to provide that.
A state-of-the-art kitchen where meals will be prepared.
So Catholic Community Services will be providing the meals, and then we'll provide breakfast, and then we'll have a kitchen coordinator and some kitchen staff that will serve the meals and all of that.
And even a dog run.
So we know many people experiencing homelessness have animals, and that's a huge barrier for people coming into shelter. As long as the animal is appropriate in shelter, is not threatening, that sort of thing, then, you know, we want to be mindful of that and provide some support. So we'll have kennels that they can utilize by their bedside.
Beyond that, there are communal spaces and, of course, bathrooms and showers. Internet for the building is being provided by Google Fiber, and it's being powered to a great extent by solar power, thanks to a donation from Arik Energy. For Ativalu, those amenities are all important, as is having inviting and comfortable spaces for the women in the shelter to just be in.
Communal space for people to be, but there'll also be different services that'll be provided up in these rooms. And so we want clients to be comfortable. If you were experiencing homelessness, wouldn't you want to come into a space like this that feels inviting, that you can heal and then get connected to the services? Like, if you had a family member that was experiencing homelessness, wouldn't you want them to come into a space like this? Or would you want them to cut corners?
But perhaps the more important aspect of this for Ativalu is the community these women will be building as they work toward their own self-sufficiency.
I mean, just think about our lives, right? Yeah. What meaningful activities do we do that help us feel connected, help us feel like invigorated and all of those? People experiencing homelessness want those same things. And so helping them explore, what is it? Like, do you want to help in a community garden? Do you, are you interested in music? Like, we really want to be creative in kind of helping address, and that's a lot, and that's why it's so important that we reach out to the community and have volunteers come in that have, like Bernie doing Tai Chi, right? He has that expertise in being able to do that, and so community members being willing to share their expertise with people, it's so that you can ignite some of that, like, oh, that passion, right, that all of us look for, right, and makes our lives fulfilling. And so I think moving away from just crisis to thriving, like, how do we help people thrive? Because then they're less likely to come back to shelter, right, because they have the tools that they need. And that's a lot. I mean, there's a lot of steps to that depending on what the person's barriers are, but that's my goal. Like, I would want people to be able to thrive and be a part of their community. And I think a lot of times there's this separate homeless community, and then our community, which really we need to integrate a little bit more.
The June ribbon-cutting ceremony was a moment of celebration for a number of people involved in the creation of the shelter. The Geraldine E. King Resource Center was named for a single mother who raised her 7 children alone and sometimes on public assistance. Her son, the businessman Pat King, made a gift of $4 million in his mother's honor to help build the facility.
70% of this facility is dedicated to getting them the help they need. They have all the resources here. 70% of it is counseling, financial counseling, employment counseling, housing counseling. So you've got everything here. It's all here to take them from, make that transition to self-sufficiency.
Salt Lake County Mayor Jenny Wilson said that she was grateful for the gift from the King family. She also said that when it comes to tackling homelessness in the county she leads, there was still more work to be done.
I'm so deeply grateful to the King family, Pat King, in honor of his mother, along with his siblings, his wife, his family. I think he said over 100 people were here today from the King family. I am overwhelmed with this turnout, hundreds of people here today to celebrate. And this is just a moment in time. We have more work to do. We should celebrate today, but we have to get back at it. And I'll tell you, we have more money to be raised. You know, we can't rely just on Salt Lake County, Salt Lake City, the King family, and these organizations. And there are many other donors in addition to the Kings who have stepped up. But I would just ask for anyone who has a dollar to give or an hour to give to please do so. This is not a problem that we can address on a short-term basis. We need to double down and be at it long-term.
Philanthropist Pat King issued his own call for community involvement in addressing the problem of homelessness.
Everybody has to do what they feel like they want to do, but to me, it is a community project to make this transition, because it will pay back in spades. It will pay back a lot. I would encourage everybody to make the contributions.
Utah Representative Angela Romero, whose district the new facility is in, attended the ribbon cutting. She said the issue needs greater involvement at the state level because wraparound services, those services that walk a person through mental health or addiction or housing needs, those services are necessary but expensive.
What I really want to stress is we as a state have to do more to fund services for people experiencing homelessness, because we are going to have people who they're unsheltered and they'll probably never want to be in a facility such as this, and we're grateful for this structure of shelter, but I also feel like we need to make sure that we're doing wraparound services so we're not forgetting about people who may not fit this model. And it's really important for us to still have an emergency shelter in place, because not everyone will fit this structure. So I think this is a step forward, but we can't forget about people who don't fit in this paradigm.
Well, I mean, that brings up a very important a question about the pending closure of the Road Home Shelter. At that point, does that emergency shelter exist? Are there enough beds in your mind? And then wraparound services, you're talking about state funding. You have, you have a voice in that. And of course, the people listening have a voice in that too. How do we fund these services to the level that they need to be funded?
Well, I think we could divert some of the funding we've put in lobbying for public lands. Personally, I think we can put that money more invested in our communities here and address the here and the now. We're never, people will always experience homelessness. People will always gravitate towards Salt Lake City because it's an urban setting, it's the capital city with all the resources. So it's up to us as the state to support municipalities such as Salt Lake City and other municipalities who have seen people experiencing homelessness expand in their neighborhoods. But we have to also look at, what are we doing wrong as elected officials? What more can we do to make sure people have access to affordable housing, health care, a living wage? All of these are intertwined.
Representative Romero mentioned affordable housing. That's a topic that we'll dig into further on another episode. But as she put it, it's intertwined intricately with the issue of homelessness. Just ask Sue Ativalu with Volunteers of America, Utah.
I think it's well known that we have gaps in the system, one being housing. And then how do we do some prevention as far as making education accessible for folks so that they can get a living wage, if not better, jobs, you know what I mean? I mean, what are the reasons people become homeless, you know? And so that's me and my soapbox kind of systems issue, but housing is a huge piece of it. And I know Salt Lake, Utah's working on affordable housing, and we really need to do extremely affordable housing, if that makes sense, because even some of the units I wouldn't be able to afford, you know? And many of my staff as well, so.
In the Hive is a production of KCPW, a listener-supported, independent public radio resource. Learn more about all of our local programs at kcpw.org. The show's theme music is by Andrew Shaw. I'm Roger McDonough. Join us again next week for more about the issues and ideas that tie Utah together.